Welcome to Necessary Conversations with Daryl M. Taliaferro. Conversations that are real, raw, and relevant. Let's get the conversation started now.
Hey, welcome to episode number 13 of Necessary Conversations. I'm so excited to have you on the journey today. On today's episode, I'm joined by Dr. Jasmine Scott, a school psychologist, a part of the Clarksville, Montgomery County School District. She's also the founder of Ready to Soar, a mentoring program for tween girls between the ages of 10 and 13. On today's episode, we're going to discuss helping our youth deal with the challenges of 2020. Let's get to it right now. Dr. Jazz, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, we are in the midst of a challenging year. And this year has been one for the books, right? And you're a school psychologist. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
So for my district, our school psychologist's primary role is to do testing for students in special education. So we're doing IQ testing, achievement testing, you know, getting some rating skills on behaviors so we can best serve those kids who need a little extra support in the classroom.
Okay. When you consider the individuals that you work with directly and then those students who are not necessarily in your scope of influence, how have they been affected by this global pandemic?
Well, I can say that I have a unique opportunity to do a little bit more than my job description at my school. I've been allowed to do some like social skills groups with some girls and kind of build some relationships in that regard. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to talk to some of the girls even this year when it comes to dealing with all of their feelings with everything. My school district does have a traditional and a virtual option for our students. So we do have some students who are virtual who are missing some of that social component to right. being in school. Yes, the academics are important, but we all know that it's a social component to school.
Absolutely. That
we kind of need to make it through life, you know? So a lot of them are struggling with not being there, but then you have some other students who are traditional who are struggling because the main people in their social circle are not at school because they're virtual.
Right.
They're hitting it on both sides when it comes to that part. And for middle school, that social part is a lot more important to them, or it's starting to become more important in their life. So that's probably one of the main things I'm noticing as a struggle right now.
Yeah. You know, at the beginning of 2020, we, for all intents and purposes, felt that this was going to be an amazing year. You know, we felt that 2020 was going to be a year of great possibility. But at the beginning of the year, it's like it started with the death of Kobe Bryant and went down from there. And it's like everything that could go wrong has gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in every sense of the word, how do we help young people really deal with the challenges of 2020?
When you were saying that, I'm thinking, you know, when 2020 came, I think I wrote a post about, you know, I'm going to have this 2020 vision and it's going to be perfect and God's going to move and it's going to be great. And you're right. Like when Kobe died, it was like, hold on, Jesus, this is not what I signed up for this yeah. year. But when I look at the kids that I work with, a lot of them are, you know, they're uncertain about what's going on.
Right.
But so are we as adults.
Yeah.
So I think it's very important that when our kids are asking us questions about what's going on, we are completely honest. And if we're not sure, if we, you know, don't have an answer, that's okay.
Yeah.
Kids respond better to honesty than if you sit here and make up something. Oh, we're going to be fine. Or, you know, the pandemic is going to be gone in December.
Right. Right.
You know, they'd much rather you just say, you know what? I am just as confused and concerned as you are. Mm-hmm. We're going to get through this together. If you want to talk about it, talk about your feelings. Let's do that. I think that's the very important thing, is that we're open and honest about the fact that we are uncertain ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's a very profound point, because as adults, a lot of times we feel that we have to have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
We feel that we have to tell young people something, not necessarily to pacify them, but to give them a solution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we feel like we got to provide this amazing solution. And the fact is, as you said, we don't have one.
Right.
We don't know how this is going to go. We don't know how tomorrow's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how the next day is going to be. And
right.
if we are just honest with our young people and say, bruh, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you're right. They can appreciate us mm-hmm. better. You know, when you consider this global pandemic, it has caused a sense of isolation and a sense of panic. And in many cases, many of our young people don't know specifically what or how they feel. As a matter of fact, even for us as adults, we have a hard time articulating what and how we feel. All we may really know to say is, man, this is foul, or man, this is messed up. Oftentimes, because of our inability to identify or articulate what or how we feel, we simply internalize it. Yet, as we attempt to go on throughout the day, as we continue to move on with our lives, the pressure begins to grow. So much so that the pressure begins to weigh us down, and we begin to wear this pressure as a glove. Dr. Jazz, how do you determine when something is not quite right with your child? How do you really determine when something is not quite right with you?
I think is when you start to no longer feel like yourself, then you begin to realize, okay, I need to do something to feel like me again. And when I say that, when it comes to our kids in middle school, the topic of mental health really comes up a lot more. So when you look at things like depression, there's like an emotional change and a behavioral change. You notice sadness, or there's a loss of interest in things that they usually were interested in. Or when it comes to their behaviors, they no longer want to, if I no longer want to go shopping or go to Target mm-hmm. or go to Starbucks, somebody better check on me.
Yeah.
Because those two are the things that I like to do. So when things like that change, it's like you need to, it's time for someone to kind of step in and see how we can get you back on track.
Yeah. So when you look at like our young people and most, young people, they like to scroll on social media. They like to listen to music. They like to play video games. A part of this pandemic, we have seen some young people isolate themselves to the point that they don't even want to play video games. They just mm-hmm. want to sleep all day. Yes. They barely come out of their room. They barely eat, because this has had an amazing effect on them, especially when you consider the fact that COVID came in, and some of them, it affected their friends and their family, and they can't go see grandma, who potentially mm-hmm. may be in another state. And whether they say it or not, it's really impacting them. And
yes.
their behavior says it more than their words.
Mm-hmm.
So as an adult, it's important that we watch for various things. And you just mentioned we should watch for their emotional change as well as their behavioral change.
Yes.
So if their emotional stability, in our estimation, is changing and their behaviors are changing, what is the first thing that we should do? Should we immediately say, oh, you're crazy? No, I don't think we should do that, right?
No. Because when you think about it, most middle schoolers and high schoolers are a little bit crazy. Like, think back to when you were in middle school and high school.
Yeah.
Were you normal?
No, I can't say that I was.
So we all had our moments. But I do think that when we realize those things and we see those things in our kids, it's time to kind of dig a little deeper in our conversation. So asking them how they're doing, asking them what's going on, but at the same time, not allowing them to just give you one-word answers. I'm fine. I'm okay. Okay, I can tell that you're not. One thing that my mom was really good at, and I didn't appreciate it until I got older, is that when something was going on with me and she would ask me how I'm doing, I would say I'm fine. And she was like, I know you're not fine, but when you're ready to talk about it, I'm here to listen.
Yeah.
So then when I was ready, I knew I could go to her with whatever was going on.
Yeah.
And I've used that myself with some of the kids that I work with. And I'm like, okay, you're not okay, but when you're ready, I'm here. And then, the next period or the next day, okay, Dr. Jazz, can I talk to you about whatever?
Yeah.
So I think even if we're not getting anything out of them at that moment, letting them know that we're here for them when they're ready is a reassuring for them.
That's good.
Because when you think about it, if you as a child are sitting back and you're watching your parents struggle with not having a job, trying to, make sure there's food in the house, make sure bills are being paid, taking care of the kids, you don't want to add something else to their plate for them to worry about.
That's
right. So sometimes kids will hold stuff in to not be a burden on their parents.
Right.
So if the parents are able to see, okay, something's not right, but opens up that door when you're ready to talk to me, I'm here. It kind of takes some of that pressure off the kid to be a kid and go to their parent when they need them.
Right. Now that's good. And I think, one of the things that you mentioned in terms of what your mom did with you and what you subsequently do with your teenagers in your school and your young people, you say, hey, whenever you're ready, I'm here, which provides the unspoken safe place for them.
Mm-hmm.
It says to them, look, I'm not going to pressure you into talking, but when mm-hmm. you're ready, this is a safe place. This is a place that I will listen as a judgment-free, neutral party that can help you navigate through this season of uncertainty.
Yes.
And all of us really need that. Whether mm-hmm. you're a young person or not, all of us need to have somebody that we can talk to that's judgment-free, that's a safe place, so that we can get off of our chest all the stuff that we've dealt with in this challenging year.
Yes.
How important is it for young people to have that safe place? How important is it for young people to like really feel like I could talk to her, I could talk to him?
It's extremely important because we're all dealing with so much. But when you're in middle school and your life is changing and you are, your body is changing, you're dealing with emotions you've never dealt with before, you need somebody to talk to and process through all your feelings.
Right.
Now, granted, you may not feel comfortable talking to your parents.
Right.
Because, you know, who wants to talk to their parents when they're 13, 14 years old? Like, right. They're weird people.
Right.
But if there's an aunt or an uncle or an older cousin or an older sibling that they feel safe enough to talk about, you know, the woes of being a middle schooler or a high schooler, it's important to have that. Because, you know, your friends, while they mean well, may not always give you the best advice.
Right.
But sometimes someone who's older, who's been there, who's been through it, can kind of guide you a little bit better.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you phrased it as the woes of being a middle schooler. Because being in middle school, being in elementary, even being in high school is a journey in and of itself. It's an incredible challenge that affects our young people in different ways.
Yeah. You know,
for example, the middle schoolers today are incredibly different than the middle schoolers when I was in middle school. The challenges that these middle schoolers have to deal with, I didn't have to deal with.
Yeah.
I had my own challenges. I had my own issues and problems or whatever, but they have a new set that my generation didn't have to deal with. So it becomes the responsibility of adults to be sensitive to the state that our youth are in. And also to be objective enough to say, you know what, this is my child, but I may not know exactly what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
One of the barriers to parents truly helping their kid is feeling like they know their kid.
Yeah.
I know my kid. I know my kid wouldn't do that. Well, you know, okay. Yes, you know your child to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they start interacting with other children, they pick up various traits and various things that you may not recognize unless you see it with your own eye.
Yeah.
So consequently, when you take this year of 2020 and you look at all the ups and the downs, the challenges, you got COVID, you got inequality and different things of that nature, it's our responsibility to pay attention to our children to see their emotions are changing, their behaviors are changing. Let me hone in on this and really talk to them about what they got going on.
Yeah.
So this pandemic has lended itself to, as you mentioned earlier, two options, a virtual option of school and a physical in-person option. Now, when I was growing up, I wanted to go to school mainly for the social aspect of it.
Yeah.
I knew that I would see my best friend, David. I knew that I would, you know, go to gym. I knew that I would, you know, have recess with other friends. You know, when I was growing up, I got four sisters. I'm the only boy. So it gave me an opportunity to go to school and see my friends who are guys. We could play ball and all that. In the midst of this pandemic, kids are at home.
Mm-hmm.
The only social interaction that many of them have is opening up a laptop, pressing enter, and clicking onto their virtual classroom.
Right.
They still got to deal with mama or daddy all day. There's no break from that. And that has a psychological impact as well.
Yeah.
How do you help them kind of break out of that mundane and really be a kid?
Well, first to kind of, I guess, piggyback on what you were saying, I told my teachers that I'm close with time and time again this year. I am so glad I am not a teacher.
Yeah.
Working in the school system right now, especially one that is working with them virtually, because not only are you dealing with the fact that they're not having the social interaction, but then when you think about it, when you ask your class to be on Zoom with your camera on and you realize that you don't have the things that your peers may have, their home doesn't look the same. You can tell your home is a little bit, you know, maybe not as well kept, or you don't have the fancy things. Then that's something else that then hits your ego a little bit.
Right.
When you're at school, you're kind of all like, yes, there are some indicators that of those that may have a little bit more money or, you know, or whatever, but you're kind of on a level playing field a little bit more when you're in school.
Right.
But when you're on Zoom and you're forcing me to turn my camera on compared to another student who has a lot more.
Right.
That's a blow to me and my ego. So now you have taken me away from my friends and you've put me on blast that I don't have as much money as somebody else may have.
Right.
So some teachers have told me while they are teaching, they're doing their lessons, they're doing the things that they're supposed to do, some of them, their main concern right now for kids is their social well-being.
Yeah.
Because they know that they're at home. Some of them are responsible for younger siblings. So parents may be at work while they're at school, and they're at home taking care of two or three other kids who may be doing their own Zooms or things like that. So then they're not even able to be a kid in this moment.
Right.
So it's so many different dynamics. So then when I'm able to connect with one of them and just talk through it, and maybe just ask them the questions about how are you doing? You know, what's going on? What would you like to do? What can you do? And just not let the conversation not be so adult focused,
right?
But just allowing them to be a kid in that moment, I think helps them a little bit for at least a moment to realize I am a middle schooler or I'm a high school kid who can just be a kid,
right?
For a moment,
right. When you consider the fact that you have a kid who is at home on virtual, mm-hmm. having to take care of two other kids, I mean, you said it best. I need to, as an adult, kind of help my child still maintain a sense of normalcy mm-hmm. so they can stay as a child.
Yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, you know, if, you know, my friend said something smart or I said something smart, the adults in the room would say, stay in a child's place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to help our children stay in a child's place due to no fault of their own.
Right.
When I was growing up, the adult said stay in a child's place because it was my fault. I stepped in a ram that wasn't mm-hmm. my ram to step in. I was yeah. nosy or I interjected myself in a situation that I should not have. Mm-hmm. But in this day, you have children who have no choice but to interject themselves in situations right. because it is what it is.
Right.
So it's the year 2020. And what we felt was going to be an amazing year has turned out to be a very chaotic year, to say the least.
Yes.
For many of us as adults, we really don't know what to make of this year. And if we feel that way, imagine what our youth feel.
Mm-hmm.
From the death of an NBA legend to the coronavirus to missing proms, graduations, and even seeing so much racial inequality play out right before their very eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can't scroll on social media without seeing another act of police brutality.
Right.
You know, Dr. Jazz, we've experienced racial injustice all of our lives,
mm-hmm.
but it hasn't quite been like this.
Right.
What have you said to the young people you work with that are experiencing it firsthand?
I've been able to have some conversations with some of the kids in my school when they've dealt with other students who have said things that have been offensive. And their first response is, we gonna fight. I'm about to clap back. And yeah. I'm like, okay, let's think about this. What is that going to solve?
Right.
I understand you're angry. I understand you're upset. I understand you feel how you feel. And I am not minimizing that at all.
Right.
But what is that going to solve at the end of the day?
Yeah.
So if the comments that were made by the other students were out of pure disrespect because they know exactly what they said and they wanted to hurt you, then we need to figure out how we're going to address that. If the comment was made out of pure, they just didn't understand what they were saying, or the big one, well, you say the N-word to your friends, how come I can't say the N-word to you?
Wow.
That's a valid question.
It is a valid question.
But you just can't. You know, that you just can't do that.
Yeah.
So some of the girls that I've worked with, they'll try to tell their peers, like, no, that's not how this works. You don't get to say that. So now some of the minority kids may get in trouble as well for using the N-word because it's inappropriate for school.
Right.
But then it causes these kind of conversations of, well, if they can say it, I can say it too.
Right.
And that's not how it works at all.
No.
So talking it through with them, and some of them have had some really great ideas as far as, can we educate the other students so they understand why this word hurts us? And to hear them at 7th and 8th grade talking about educating their peers on the meaning behind certain things was great because it showed a deeper level of understanding for them.
Right.
Because I don't know if at 7th grade, if I was thinking about, you know, or for me, it was 6th grade when this boy told me to go back to Africa. And my response was to kick him in the leg. And I went away. But I didn't think about, let me educate him to say, that's not even where I'm from. I wasn't thinking that. So to even see that they are thinking about educating their peers is a major step. So I was very proud to just hear that from some of my kids.
Yeah. 2020 has been one of those years that we have to take the initiative to educate those that are around us,
mm-hmm.
because what we thought people knew, they don't know.
Right.
Even in our own community, There's so much misinformation about our heritage, about, you know, what we believe in as African-Americans that is simply not true. Mm-hmm. Things that we hold close are not true. But one of the things that and this may seem weird what I'm about to say. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I thank God for as relates to 2020 is that now this year has forced certain conversations that have been swept under the rug. When you consider people like Botham Jean, when you consider people like Philando Castile, individuals like George Floyd, who was the most talked about, most widely viewed death as relates to police brutality. Mm-hmm. On May 25th, 2020, he was killed at the hands of a Minneapolis police officer who kneeled on his neck for over 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. You have a guy like this who is killed simply because he allegedly was paying with a counterfeit $20 bill. Mm-hmm. When later it was determined that it wasn't fake, mm-hmm. it was a real $20 bill. Our young people, they're seeing this. When I was growing up at school, we would talk about, hey, did your mom and daddy had a talk with you? And we knew what that was.
Right.
We knew like the talk was about sex. Mm-hmm. But now we're in a generation where you say, did your mother and father have the talk with you? And you like, which one? Mm-hmm. Because it's not enough just to have the talk about sex. Now you have to have the talk about race.
Yes.
What happens if you get stopped by the police? What mm-hmm. happens if you get pulled over? How do you behave yourself? And it's challenging even as an African-American man to think about that. Mm-hmm. Because even as a full-grown man who I consider myself to be an upstanding citizen mm-hmm. is pulled over, there's still an element of nervousness that comes over me. My hands are immediately at 10 and 2.
Right.
I'm almost like a statue at that point. And I go ahead and roll down my window before he gets there because I don't want him to see my left hand moving to roll down the window, mm-hmm. thinking that I'm reaching for something.
Right.
You know, and then when he says, license and registration, please, I narrate the whole thing. I mean, mm-hmm. I go into James Earl Jones mode. I'm like, sir, I'm about to move my right hand to my wallet. Mm-hmm. And then I ask, is this okay?
Right.
And then, you know, sometimes police officers get upset, but it's like, bruh, I'm trying to live.
Right.
I'm trying to drive off from here with my life. Mm-hmm. If we as adults feel that way, mm-hmm. and looking at the situation with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Botham Jean, Philando Castile and Mike Brown and Sandra Bland, mm-hmm. all of these who have lost their lives, imagine what our youth are feeling. How do we help them have a trust for the police? Mm-hmm. while still valuing the life of African-Americans?
Yeah, that's a very loaded question. But I think that it's very important that this conversation that we have to have doesn't happen when our kids turn 16 and they get their license and they're able to get the keys and go driving for the first time.
Yeah.
You have to have this conversation at 10, at 9, a lot earlier, and almost make it a continuous conversation
right.
that we have over time, because something else is going to happen where they're going to ask the question, why did this happen? So explaining to them that if you live in a diverse community and you have a diverse selection of friends, understanding that you may not be able to do the same things your friends do because of the color of your skin.
Yeah.
You can't go knocking on neighbors' houses and running and thinking it's going to be okay.
Right.
Because if something happens, you are going to be the one that's going to be, you know, pointed out as the troublemaker. So it's unfortunate that you have to, in a sense, take away their childhood a little bit because you're making them think because they can't do those things that they want to do with their friends. That should just be fun things to do.
Right.
But at the same time, the consequences are not the same.
Very true.
Depending on the color of your skin.
Yeah.
So it's a conversation we have to have with our boys and our girls, especially our boys, because they get it a lot more than we do. And I still, like, I get nervous myself. I was driving today and I just heard the sirens behind me. I said, oh my goodness, what did I do? Yeah. And they were getting somebody else.
Yeah.
But even in that moment, I'm like, okay, I'm around the corner from my house. Can I just get home, Lord? But I shouldn't have to think that way.
That's right.
But I do. And the other thing is to remind our kids, every police officer is not bad.
That's right.
Every white person is not bad.
That's right.
Every black person, like every person, depending on their category at the time, is not a bad person. Mm-hmm. There just happens to be bad people in every group.
Right.
So I can't say I don't like anybody in this particular group just because one person hurt me.
Right.
That's not fair to the whole group.
That's right.
So we have to teach our kids that we can't judge everybody in a group just because a select few of them think a certain way or behave a certain way.
That's so true. And, you know, one of the things that I think is important is a part of having the conversation when you consider the talk mm-hmm. is also, you know, when I was growing up, my mother and my father would tell me, mm-hmm. be careful who you hang out with. And in 1989, this national case, the Central Park Five, mm-hmm. where this young lady was jogging through Central Park on April 19th, 1989, and she was raped. She was beaten. She was assaulted. Mm-hmm. And it was determined that by the police during that time, it had to be some young black youth. Sometimes police officers, in an effort to solve a case, to get their clout, to do this and to do that, they want to make sure that the case is shut. They were not concerned about whether these kids actually did it. They just had a mandate from the powers that be in that time, because this was such national news, mm-hmm. to shut this case. I said all of that to say this. These young people were minding their own business. They were just in the park having fun. They were doing what they do. Mm-hmm. And this became more than just a rape case. It became black and Latino kids against this white woman. And unfortunately, Donald Trump placed in the newspaper during that time a full page ad that asked for the death penalty for these five boys. And once it came out that these five boys didn't do it, he didn't, you know, send a retraction. Mm-hmm. He didn't apologize. There was nothing that went on. So we got to tell our kids, be careful who you hang with, be careful what you say to the police, and make sure that you're in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. We got to be cautious on how we do it, but we have to do it, because in this generation, it's not good enough just to send them to the park and they're cool. Oh, they're good. They're at the park. No. Before you know it, they can be downtown.
Right.
Or in jail. So 2020 has been a year. When you think about the global pandemic, you think about, you know, hey, friends and family with COVID, you think about virtual school and then the racial inequality, it's caused a lot of people, especially our young people, to be depressed. Mm-hmm. You know, and depression is real. A lot of people want to sweep that under the rug. A lot of people want to say, nah, they're okay, they'll be fine. No. Mm-hmm. You have to identify when your children are depressed. Mm-hmm. So if there's somebody, if there's a parent listening, if there's an aunt, an uncle, a godfather, godmother listening to this podcast, how would you help them identify if their child is depressed? I know mm-hmm. earlier we mentioned about paying attention to the emotional and the behavioral changes. Mm-hmm. But then if once they identify it, what do they do next?
I would talk to the counselor either at the school, because that would be someone who will be able to refer them to someone that they could talk to, a therapist either outside of the school or even in the school. There's a therapist that works in the building. Mm-hmm. So that could be an option for someone to have a therapist that's right there. I think even before we get to that point, I think the first thing is for parents to be open to that service. We in the African-American community have a tendency to say what happens here in the home stays in the home. We don't talk to nobody. Mm-hmm. Or we just gonna pray about it, or we gonna go to church on Sunday. Everything gonna be okay. Yeah. It'll be fine. And I'm not saying you can't have faith in God and trust that God's gonna get you through it, because he will.
Right.
At the same time, God has provided us with some services.
Yes.
Therapists who have been trained to help you dig a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you gotta do the work, and then God's gonna keep pushing you through to get through the rest of it.
Right.
Part of the reason why I even went into this field is because in some cases it's easier to talk to somebody who looks like you.
Yes.
So when my girls see me, they may feel a little bit more at ease to share what's going on.
Yeah.
And the parents too, because I can understand where you're coming from a little bit.
Right.
So I think that it's important to, one, try to have somebody for them to talk to. Two, be available as a parent just to be a listening ear when they're ready to talk and share with you, and find some ways to do some things that allows the family to connect and bond and do something fun. It could be a game night, walking through the park, going to a museum, doing a puzzle, anything that's just going to get you guys together with no pressure.
Right.
Not talking about school or work or anything like that. Just allowing you guys to have a moment of just fun to just kind of bond and connect. And it's amazing how those types of things can just help.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you mentioned in terms of as a parent, as aunt, uncle, whatever the designation is, listening to your child, mm-hmm. because kids are speaking, mm-hmm. but we ain't listening. And it's important to listen to your children without feeling the need to respond.
Yes.
Because our kids just want somebody to listen. And it's almost like a, okay, that's off my chest.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about something else. Versus always feeling the need to provide a solution. They know we don't know. They know we're in the midst of this pandemic too.
Mm-hmm.
All they want is to be heard and to know that somebody's there that can help them process what they're dealing with.
Right.
Even if that means you say nothing but, okay, I understand. And I believe you're absolutely right. As young Black boys, as young Black girls, it is important to see somebody that looks like you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not to take away from a psychologist who happened to be of other colors, but it's something to be said when I sit down in your office and I'm having a conversation with you about mm-hmm. my cultural implications
mm-hmm.
and you can identify. Now, you have an amazing organization that you founded, and it's called Ready to Soar. And it's a mentoring program for tween girls between the ages of 10 and 13. Tell us a little mm-hmm. bit about that, because I feel that what you said earlier in terms of listening and being there, that is important for this time.
Yeah. So I have always had a heart for middle school girls, always. It never fails. When I was in school and they would ask you, what population do you want to work with? And I say middle school girls, and everybody in their head would look at me like I grew a third head because they're like, "What? Well, why would you want to work with them?
Mm-hmm.
Someone has to."
Yes.
And I used to be a middle school girl, so I know what middle school girls would be wanting and looking for and things like that. So I've always had a passion for that. And I've had the opportunity to start my mentoring group actually at my middle school. So the last two school years, I was able to meet with my sixth graders, seventh graders, and eighth graders once a week, talked about a variety of things, different topics from self-esteem, coping mechanisms, friendships, being social, even down to like giving them a fake budget and watching them try to figure out, you know, if they want a car or a Jeep or this cell phone or that cell phone.
Yeah.
Those little decisions that they don't realize add up over time. During quarantine, I actually had the opportunity to kind of expand it a little bit larger, trying to do this on a virtual level since so many kids are virtual, and it just allows for me to reach out to a lot more students. So it's just amazing to kind of see the vision that God gave me and that passion and kind of put it out there and take that risk of stepping out to be just another person that they can go to. But then at the same time, also trying to include some words of motivation for parents, because it's hard being a parent of a middle school kid.
Yeah.
My mom, on a number of occasions, called me an alien child because my emotions were all over the place. Like, I could be happy in the morning and in a completely different mood by afternoon.
Yeah.
So I know it wasn't easy for her dealing with me.
Right.
So trying to then give some motivation and to kind of empower the parents too, that, you know, even though we may not say it as teens, we appreciate you. You're doing a good job. Keep doing it.
Right.
And just give them other little nuggets of support to kind of help continue building those relationships with their teens.
That's good. So Ready to Soar is a national mentoring program that's designed to help tween girls between the ages of 10 and 13. How can individuals, whether they live in Tennessee, in Illinois, in Florida, how can they reach you? Because you're doing phenomenal work and you're really connecting young girls, not only to other young girls who are on the journey, but you're connecting them to influential women to help them grow and to develop, to see examples that they ordinarily would not see mm-hmm. if it wasn't for your program. So how can people get in touch with you and get a part of the program?
I do have an Instagram page that's set up. So it's at Ready to Soar. And that is REDY, the number 2, SOAR. I do have a Facebook page under the same name, Ready to Soar. And then my website is www.areyoureadytosoar.com.
You know, our young people are going through so much. It is vitally important that we surround them with the right people and provide the right resources that can assist them in navigating the uncertainties of life. As you well know, 2020 has been a roller coaster of a year. And just as we as adults have felt the tension and have experienced the frustration of this year, so have our youth. I want to encourage you in this season to pay close, and I dare say even closer, attention to the youth in your family. Pay attention to any changes in their behavior or mood. If they seem withdrawn, or if it appears that they are no longer interested in what they once were, take a moment to converse with them. Ask them these questions. How are you feeling? What are you feeling? How can I help? And of course, don't forget to remind them that you're right there. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Jasmine Scott, for being on episode number 13. I appreciate her wisdom and all of her tips that she shared in this episode. Listen, if you have a tween girl between the ages of 10 and 13, and you know that she may need a little help in getting motivated, being encouraged, why not connect her with this amazing mentoring program, Ready to Soar? All you have to do is go to the website, www.areyoureadytosoar.com. I promise you, it'll change their lives. Until next time, peace.
Thanks for listening to Necessary Conversations with Daryl M. Taliaferro. Follow us on social media at Necessary Conversations Podcast. Join the conversation by leaving a message on our website, necessaryconversationspodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you'll be notified every time a new one drops. Now, go have the conversations you need to have with the people you need to have them with.